This episode is brought to you by America's Rehab Campus. Get on the road to recovery with the best rehab in beautiful Arizona. Dial 1-833-272-7342. That's 1-833-ARC-REHAB.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now tuned in to the Armchair.
Good morning. Thank you so much for tuning in to the R-Cast. My name is Buddha.
And I'm Vance.
And I'm Michaela.
Thank you guys so much. We're here again. It's another beautiful morning. Today, we have a very powerful testimony. The person that we have in the studio today, she's an employee of ARC, and she reached out. She wanted to come into the studio and share her testimony. So without further ado, let's get started on it. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a big, warm round of applause to Miss Patricia.
All right. Welcome to the team.
Yeah, yeah. Good morning, Miss Patricia. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
All right. Awesome. Awesome. Thank you for coming and sharing your story. It's always a good feeling to know that, you know, people are listening and I'm just curious, what made you want to come in and share your story today?
Well, the reason why I have this job, you know, is to help other addicts, you know, recover. And I was an addict myself. And so I thought by giving my story will help other addicts as well.
That's wow. Awesome. Thank you so much for saying that, because that's exactly why I started and stayed in this field myself, because I could have done other things. But you know what I wanted to do? I wanted to get on the playing field that I got clean from, so I can help others, just like you just now said.
That's awesome. And how long have you been with ARC?
May 20th, I'll be here a full year.
A full year. Congratulations.
That's great. Welcome to the ARC team.
Thank you.
It's very nice to meet you. I just celebrated almost a year and a half at the ARC. So we're about the same timing.
There you go.
Awesome.
So, Miss Patricia, did you come through to the ARC? Is this where you got sober?
No, I actually went to the Haven.
Okay. Shout out to the Haven. All right. That's cool. And where are you from? Are you from Tucson, Arizona?
Originally from New York, upstate New York, West Mount Kisco area.
Oh, wow.
The town of Patterson. We moved out here in 89. Everybody, mom's side of family lives back east. Everybody, my dad's family lives in Tucson. So,
oh, wow.
My dad's
okay.
Like, let's do a switcheroo. And
wow.
They also were sick of shoveling snow and everything like that all the time. So we came to the desert.
Yeah. Thanks for reminding me of my past, because guess what? All my dad's family is East Coast, and all my mother's family is West Coast.
I've never been east of Texas before, ever. So
no?
For me, it's a completely different world. Like, it's something I can't even comprehend or fathom, like, what it must be like to have to wake up and...
Lucky you.
And throw salt on the asphalt and get... No, thank you. No, thank you. So you stayed there for quite a bit. Were you... did you go through school in New York and everything like that?
I went through... K through fifth, and in sixth grade, I was here.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let's dive in a little bit. I'm just curious. I got a couple questions for you. Your mom and dad, are they, you know, were you raised with both of your parents?
Yes, I was. They've been married now for 53 years.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
That is great. My mom and dad have been married 62 years.
Nice.
That's a blessing. You don't see that very often.
You don't.
Mm-hmm. You really, really don't, man. I was just listening to a health podcast this morning, and they were talking about how so many kids nowadays are worried about bringing kids into this world because family values, marriage, things like that, that are of importance, you know, really valuable things that are, you know, to us as human beings, we need that. Like, most people are kind of stepping away from those values. It's sad to see, but
that's why I like to call dads out, because we're supposed to be with our wives and our kids. And unfortunately, many, many kids these days don't have a father in their life.
Yeah, mothers too. There's, you know, sometimes that happens the opposite way. It's
yeah, that's true.
But no, that's cool. And do you have any siblings? Did you grow up with any siblings?
I do. I have two sisters and a brother.
Two sisters, younger, older?
I have one older than I come than my younger sister and my brother.
Okay. All right. That's cool. And when you guys moved, what was the reasoning for wanting to do that switcheroo? Everyone just got tired of it?
Well, everybody in my dad's side of the family lives out here, so he wasn't spending much time with them. So he wanted to be with his family more. And so also the climate, you know, Arizona's beautiful. And and my parents are real estate brokers and stuff. So and they work as a team. And just being out here, it's just much more of a climate for that.
Okay.
Business as well, instead of having to do it in the rain and snow.
Man. So you guys were pretty excited then, I'm guessing, to make the move down here. Everyone was looking forward to it.
I was quite nervous, actually. I didn't know what to expect. I'd never been here, really. And I thought it was just nothing but desert and dirt and cowboys.
That's funny.
That is funny, isn't it?
Yeah, I can understand why people would think that, especially because like in the old school cartoons and stuff, it was always just desert and cactus and nothing, you know?
Yeah. Real quick, I wanted to call myself out. So I Googled how many dads are not in their kids' lives this year in the United States. It says, according to the United States Census Bureau, 19.5 million children, more than one in every four, live without a father this year in America.
Wow.
So 19.5 million don't have dads in their lives.
That's crazy to think about. That is super crazy to think about, man. You know, for anyone out there who
is... By the way, I was one of those dads. That's why I was calling my old self out.
Hey, it's all right. It's all right. But it's also important for those dads and for those, you know, mothers that are not in their kids' lives right now. It's never too late. It's never too late. Kids,
that's biblical too. It's never too late.
It's never too late. Get into your kids' lives, man. I mean, even if it's at 30 years old, that relationship is very important for children, for children to have, you know?
So thanks for letting us know your mom and dad are still together.
No problem.
You came down here. You know, you said in fifth grade, right? So about fifth grade. How were you in school growing up? What schools did you go to here?
Junior high school. Mesa Verde and Cross and CDO.
Oh, so okay. You went to elementary school, junior high school, and high school here.
Yeah.
And were you a good student? Did you do good?
I was okay. I was in special ed classes, so I had that self-esteem issues, you know, wanting to be out there, but just, you know. And it was okay. It was just okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how was it adapting to the new, you know, change of environment coming from the East Coast? Did you like it right away? Did it take some time to adapt?
It did take some time, definitely. Yeah. Everybody was like so clicky, and I didn't really like that much. And they all had their own friends and stuff. And so here I come, you know, it just felt kind of outcasted a bit.
Yeah.
And having to leave all my friends back east and everything like that.
So did you end up graduating? Did you get your diploma?
I did. I graduated from CDO.
Oh, you did?
I actually graduated early because I didn't really like it there. So I took summer classes and got myself out.
Dang, man. Yeah. That's cool.
My parents are like strong about education and everything like that. So.
Okay. So in high school, were you using at all? Did you start drinking or anything like that?
I drank a lot. Yeah.
Even in high school?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So how were you introduced to that back in high school?
Well, you know, we always want to be accepted, you know, and so I was being accepted in the wrong areas.
Okay.
You know, and like by the partiers and everything like that.
Was mom and dad drinking back then too?
Well, my family were Irish and Cuban, so we all, both sides of my family like to drink.
Irish and Cuban. You had some good food, huh? I'm hungry. I haven't eaten today. I'm just thinking of the food. That must be awesome.
Oh, just reminded me, I'm African and Indian.
Are you really? Yes. You got good food too, man. Yeah. Oh, man. So, okay. So what age did you start drinking for the first time?
I want to say going to the high school parties, probably my sophomore year.
Sophomore year.
Yeah.
Okay. And did it cause any issues at this time, or was it still pretty fun throughout high school?
I was good through high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. I drank on like the weekends, you know, bonfires and everything like that in the desert, because back then it was like more scarce of houses and a lot more areas like washes and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know, you're drinking to fit in. I think that's something that we all try and do. We try and fit in, you know, not realize. It's crazy how you think when you're a kid, huh? Adults have everything, you know, everything put together. You know, you look at an adult, they're like, man, they got all their stuff together. And as you get older, even when you're an adult, like you realize even adults don't have it really together. We're all just trying to fit in and find some, you know, we're all just trying to find some way of being able to put that, you know, the little toys that the kids would play, they put the square in the square hole. Like we're all just trying to fit in, you know what I mean? So after high school, you know, when did you start noticing that, you know, did you start using more drugs? Was that ever a part of your story, or was it just alcohol?
It was alcohol and drugs big time. I was like a replacer. So all of a sudden when I got into like the harder drugs and everything, alcohol went away.
Oh, okay.
And then I just started like really using really bad and everything like that. And
So you kind of go back and forth sometimes from alcohol to marijuana and then to drugs, thinking that, you know, I can do it the way I want to do it.
Yeah.
Because that was
and
me.
It was always to be like accepted. And, you know, even though it wasn't the right areas to be accepted, but it's like, you know, those were the people that I thought were friends and really in reality weren't.
It's stumbling blocks. That's what they are.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
That's real. So what ended up happening? When did you, you know, you started, you said that you started dabbling in other things. What age were you when you started dabbling in other drugs?
I started really getting hard in about 2012. And that's when my life basically just really started going down.
2012.
I have two boys and stuff, two different dads and everything. And, you know, and just relationships just didn't work and everything. And so it just, I just felt more and deeper and depressed and everything like that.
Okay.
And just my self-esteem never was really big. So like, I never actually thought I was worthy of life. You know, I don't even know how many times I tried to take my life and everything.
Huh? And that was me.
Yeah. I OD'd like a couple times and within my addiction. And, you know, thankfully someone was there to take me to the hospital and get me okay and everything. And my family did like an intervention and everything like that. And my sister had my kids from 2016 all the way until last July was when I got my younger son back. But I feel blessed that I am in recovery of like 21 months clean.
That's fantastic.
I thought I had 22, but I was wrong. No fronts.
Hey, that's great though. No, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so my family, I mean, everything, ever since I got this job, that's why I like hold this job with such like respect and like dignity, because it's like everything started coming back to me.
Yeah.
You know, my dad was like, you're not going to get a job. You're not going to, you know, we know how you are. You're going to go through the residential at the Haven, the IOP. And then I still wasn't looking for a job during the IOP. And my dad was just like, when are you going to look for a job? Mm-hmm. And so that was like my thing, because I don't even know how many times I tried to get into recovery, but it just never clicked. And this time being a forced recovery, being on pretrial pretty much the whole time that I was working here, and throughout the Haven and throughout the IOP as well. Last year, September 28th, was when I was sentenced to probation. And that was because I put myself in the program and started really actually working a program, going to meetings and everything like that, and just actually living life and not worried about who's accepted of me. And the only thing that matters is that I'm accepted within.
Yeah.
And so, and that self-love and everything like that, you know, which comes with it. And today I walk around with a smile on my face all day, because it's like, I'm truly happy. You know, I'm truly happy, number one, to have this job. I'm truly happy just within life, because I know what it can bring me, you know? And that's why I put myself straight neutral with all the clients and everything, because I can trip and fall tomorrow and where would I be in detox?
Yeah. When you initially said, you know, growing up in school, going into like special ed classes and stuff and always wanting to fit in, there's always, you know, maybe you felt like there was a part of you that just, you know, like you said, even up to a couple years ago, it was like you didn't feel worthy. You didn't feel like you fit in. You didn't feel, you know, and I think that's something that a lot of people, especially now, you know, imagine raising kids in this modern day and age with the technology and, you know, how all these kids are just in. I can't even explain to you how many times my wife and I will go out to have something to eat and there's a sick, like a little kid there. The mom and dad are talking and the kid is just stuck in that tablet type of thing. You know, I think a lot of people feel those things. We all have those insecurities, right? And it's amazing to see that you have been able to push yourself through that and to be able to come out on the other side better and happier with a big smile on your face, you know?
Yeah, I have a real quick question. So what kind of advice would you give someone that has a family member that's getting ready to maybe do an intervention on them? And so what made you decide to say yes to go to treatment when that intervention was done on you?
Well, when I went to treatment with my family, it was like, you know, I just, with my family doesn't understand addiction at all, you know, and they just be like, why can't you just put it away? You know, and it's like, it's more like everything in the head, you know, it's like why I went to recovery is this was my fourth time at the Haven. And I went because I really wanted my family. And without my family, I was like nothing really.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was just playing, I was on the, just on the playing field, like you said, you know, just living life and just letting it go. And that's really
how, day by day.
Yeah. And it just felt like Groundhog's Day, the movie, you know, just doing great the same movie. Thing over and over and over and over and over again.
And I had to choose it. And what you said was biblical because we're supposed to choose our family over ourselves.
Yeah.
Man. So we said the Haven four times. Was that, were those your only experiences in recovery, those four times? Did you go more than that?
Those times were, and then I went to, you know, CBI, La Frontera, you know, all those places for extra help. I was always one, like, I was scared to come here because I didn't want to be around guys while I'm in recovery.
Yeah.
And everything. And that was just my thing. But, I mean, this program is just amazing. You know, I kind of wish I would have taken a chance to come here.
Yeah.
And just seeing how everybody just flourishes here.
Yeah.
Is amazing as well. And just watching them have a smile on their face instead of seeing how they came in and crying and everything.
Yeah, no.
And you said you're scared to be around guys. What was that fear?
Well, within my addiction, you know, I mean, I lived on the streets for a minute. I slept at bus stops, so you can only imagine, you know.
Oh, man.
I slept in the parks, and when it was raining, you know, those tunnel slides, I stuck one foot out one side and one foot out the other so that I could just stay in the tunnel.
Yeah.
And thank you for answering that, because I'm sure people listening were probably wondering, well, what made her afraid to be around guys? But you just now proved exactly what you were going through.
Yeah, and I had guns pointed at me and everything. Wow. And yeah, I mean, it wasn't fun, but I just, you know, I was just sitting in the corner doing my drugs so I didn't have to feel.
And when you were like actively like using, how did the relationship change with your parents? Were they completely like kind of like pushing you away? I know you said that they didn't understand. I know that's a big thing for a lot of people. You know, if they've never experienced what an addiction can do and how an addiction can, you know, take over your life, they're very much like, you do it this way. There's no other in between. There's nothing like that. You know, where did you have a relationship with your parents throughout that? Or
it was tough love.
It was tough love.
Yeah, it was very tough love.
Can you explain that?
Well, in my addiction, you know, the second time at the Haven, I was brought back. My parents let me go back to the house that I was renting from them and everything. And I didn't have my kids, you know?
Yeah.
And I grew my kids up in that house where I was renting. And it was, I was emotionally distraught, and so I invited the wrong person. And that person just took everything. And my parents were using it as their storage and everything.
Yeah.
So it was like he took everything from my parents. And, you know, and to this day, they're still mad at me about it. But they let go.
Yeah.
And everything. And so that was the main reason why of the tough love and everything, because like I took so much from them.
At this point in your recovery, where you're at today, are you grateful for their tough love, or do you think that like something else? Because I always, when we're doing these podcasts, you know, you hear families, everybody does it differently. And it's, of course, to the person, but are you thankful for that tough love, or would it have been better to have, you know, a little bit of both?
I think it made me fight a little bit harder, even though when I was out there, I didn't even want to be alive, but I'm still here today because I knew sometime within I would have my family back. This and last year was the first year that I was able to be back for holidays and everything like that and have my son living with me.
That's great.
And this weekend, I'm going to NAU to watch my older son graduate.
All right. Congratulations.
I know.
That's cool.
Yes. And so to be a part and to be able to be there for that, you know. And I was talking to Chris, our lead, yesterday. And he's like, if you ever go back, Trisha, I'm going to kick your butt. I'm like, make sure you kick it really hard because and I don't want that life no more.
Hey, Michaela, thank you so much for bringing that up, because that's the very thing that I was really glad about when my mother actually had to kick me out of my restaurant and told me, you're not coming back here unless you go get help. And so you know what I do to this day? Thank her for saying, you know what, son, I needed to punish you for doing the things you were doing in your addiction. But thank you for deciding to come back to do the right thing. So thanks for bringing that up.
No, I think it's good. I mean, I think there is a healthy balance when it comes to the tough love thing too. You know, my mom,
God said I punish those that I love.
Shout out to my mom. Don't cry when you hear this because she's a big baby. She cries all the time, right? But like, I know she had to put some tough love on me when I was younger. But I mean, I absolutely needed it.
Amen.
I absolutely needed it.
Biblical, what you're saying.
No, I mean, I did need it, you know. But I think it's nuts when you really think about, you know, with parenting and stuff. You have certain parents who are very, what's the word? You enable them to be like selfish and to be self-centered, you know, and I see that a lot. And then you also see the opposite end. It's like you have to understand that your kids are, they have their own spirit. They have their own ideas and their own thoughts, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, you can actually have tough love, but you can't have mean love.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go.
You just literally proved some scripture when what you just now said, because my mom gave me some tough love. Mean love, that's not real love.
Oh, yeah. So your son is graduating from NAU, right? And I know you said that you can come back to the house now. You guys are I'm guessing the relationships in your life with your family and the people you love has all gotten better.
It has.
I think that part of your testimony is very, very important for people to know. And the reason why I say that is because so many people walk through these doors and I feel like they feel beaten on the inside. Like I have burnt bridges with my mom, my dad, my brothers and sisters, my friends, people I care about because of myself in the active addiction. Were there times where you felt like that was never going to get healed?
I did. I felt it many times, you know, because I kept going into recovery and trying recovery. And this time, I think what really put me stronger was being on pretrial and being on probation and not wanting to go to prison.
Yeah.
And that was my main target. You know, I put myself in the program. I'm working a program. I'm going to meetings. You know, I'm helping other addicts, you know. And when you come into recovery, statistics show like 10% of what happened last time when you were in your addiction, it's 10 times worse than what you'll get back. And it's true because every single time I went back, I was with the even worser crowds. I was, and just everything just started just depleting myself, my sanity, and just everything. And so, you know, what I tell everybody out there of the clients and everything, I just say, push yourself, you know, you can do this. Don't give up because you are so worth this. You're worth recovery and you're worth a new life and just keep changing and keep a smile on your face because that's what you deserve.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What made you start to see that in yourself? You know, you said growing up and having those insecurities on the inside, what allowed you to finally get to that breaking point where you felt like you did deserve a better life for yourself?
Well, at the Haven, I like broke down. I'm like, obviously I wasn't doing anything good in my life. You know, I'm going to be teachable. I'm going to follow direction. I'm follow guidance. Show me how to do life.
Yeah. Rock bottom.
And yeah. So I just listened and I just watched and I just followed. And that's where I am today. You know, I right out of the IOP, I got my place right out of IOP. I got this job. I got my son. I bought a car. I got my fingerprint card. I was able to stay with the company, you know, that survived me through this whole entire thing. And it's like everybody here is so supportive and so amazing. It's so cool. It's like it's, you know, I've never been employed this long because of self-doubt in my head. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, they're making fun of you. Oh, they don't care about you. Oh, you're not worth this, you know. And within 3 months, I'd be quitting.
Wow.
And, you know, but today I have so much support here. You know, every single time I walk around, it's like someone's coming, one of the employees are coming up to me and giving me a hug and saying, you're doing great, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so cool, you know, to have that because of the self-doubt. And, you know, I always lift it now with affirmations, just affirming that I'm worth this ride.
Absolutely.
That's why I appreciate the ARC so much because employees here, they care so much about the clients that they're willing to just do anything they can to just keep loving on them.
Yeah, it's amazing to hear, you know, with so many employees that have come on too, it's a continued support while you're working. You know, it's still encouraging, you know, for your next day sober. And I think that's such a powerful thing of the culture at ARC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's really cool is just like watching the people grow from detox to res to IOP to working here. You know, be like, I remember back when you were just in detox and now you're working here.
Yeah.
You know?
Like a whole new person, don't
yeah.
they?
Yeah. And they'll have a smile instead of a frown.
Yeah. I like that, especially when they're like, yeah, I had to have the nurse take a new picture of me because I looked all shot out in my detox picture. Like, yeah, bro, you did. You were shot out in your detox picture. Yep. But, you know, it's cool to see that growth, you know, and, you know, how beautiful that, you know, the relationship with your kids and everything has gotten better, too. Did they help you? Were they one of your driving forces to get you to want to change your life as well, your babies?
They always were, yeah. I mean, my kids mean the world to me. And even though I was sick, you know, and when I started getting better and I started feeling again, I didn't like it at first, but it was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, just hiding ourselves out for so long and just not even caring. But now I love my kids. Yeah. And I'm so happy for this weekend. I can't believe I'm going to be a part of that.
That's so cool. What is he majoring in?
Economics.
Economics?
Mm-hmm.
How old is he?
He's 22.
22.
Yeah.
What do you think was the pivot for you, you know, going to rehab more than once? What changed in that last time that it really stuck?
This time, what really stuck is just like I said, just being on pretrial, fighting the case, you know, and knowing that I'm not invisible anymore, you know, because I always thought I was invisible. No one can see me while I was in my addiction, you know. And so I did some stupid crap out there. And to find out what was different was the fact that I got self-worth today that I never really had.
It's so amazing what self-worth can do for somebody and knowing that you matter and knowing that you're important. It's just, that's such a huge breakthrough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for people to try and understand the depths of, you know, sometimes like what you have to go through to be able to flip that switch, to be able to finally see that, you know, and when you were, we asked, you know, earlier you had said that it was being at the Haven and going with the pretrial services and stuff. You're being held accountable. It probably got to the point where you were like, I can't believe my addiction has driven me to this point where I'm getting in trouble with the law now, things like that. And you were able to change it. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful thing. So moving forward, you know, now being sober for 21 months, you said, right? What are some of the goals and things that you have for yourself?
Now it's just to, my son and I, we live in a junior studio, so I'm going to get a two bedroom when we get back from NAU, move there. And then like, I just want to just keep helping other addicts, you know, find a new way that we don't have to be down that road anymore. You know, that it takes work. It takes a lot of emotions. It takes a lot of your dignity to actually put it out there and write it out on pen and paper. But, you know, just do it because this side of the life is so much easier, so less stressful. And it's just, it's amazing. I just feel blessed today.
That's great. And you said blessed. I was just curious, do you have like a higher power now? Did you have that before? Did you have anything like that before when you were in your addiction?
When I was in addiction, I thought I was actually living in hell.
Yeah.
You know, just going day by day and everything like that. Whereas today I feel life. I feel life how it's supposed to be. I feel, you know, I feel magical, you know, that I'm still here.
That you found like a sense of peace. So in your, was that your higher power was just feeling like the world? Is that what I'm getting off of that?
Yeah. And in the beginning, my higher power was no more than a rock.
Yeah.
You know, they're just think of something that could be better than you, you know? And it's amazing how like we have all these rocks around, you know, who knows where they all came from, you know? So obviously that was my higher power when I first started my recovery.
Yeah.
You know, and they were like, just go outside, just look something, find something that if you don't have a higher power, you just find something that is.
Yeah.
And then I took that higher power. I still have my rock. That's and everything. Cool. It sits on my dresser and everything. And then it just, by going to meetings and just buying everything, it's just like, I feel like there is a huge higher power within.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Thank you.
Thanks for saying that. And who is your higher power, by the way, dear?
God.
Amen.
He is the higher power.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. And what's your role these days here at the ARC?
I'm a BHT.
BHT.
Yeah.
Can you tell people what BHT does?
Basically, we go around and we just talk to the clients and make sure they're doing okay and mm-hmm. help them out. Make sure we know where they're at all times, if they're in groups or et cetera, or if they're in their room, and, you know, just get them out of their head a little bit. Just let them talk to you and just be a listening ear as well.
So important for people to feel like they're loved and appreciated and stuff. And that's a vital role that the BHTs play, you know, because they're caring. Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing also, which I really like about here, being able to be talk to them, you know, whereas over at the Haven, everybody was so busy.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so much staff here for the clients to help them. I know I was in my thoughts so much when I was at the Haven and I couldn't be able to actually like talk to anybody, you know, and here we're all over the place and we're here for them. That's what I really like about the ARC.
What would be something that you would say to potentially someone listening to this that's deciding whether or not to try and start their recovery?
You're worth it. You know, you deserve a new life. You don't deserve being out there, everything taken from you over and over and over and over and over again. I can't even tell you how many times I had to pick myself back up, especially being homeless. And everything, and just, you know, and live life, you know? It's so much freeing than it is just being out there.
Yeah. Man, how long were you homeless, Miss Patricia?
I was homeless from 2016 to 2018.
Wow, that's a long time. But yeah. Thank God you're out of that, man. Thank God you're out of that, you know? And look at how tough you are now. You are a rock now. You're handling business, and you got a smile on your face, yeah. man. That's a beautiful thing. You know, I just wanted to thank you once again for coming through and for shedding some positivity and bringing your smile into the ARCast today and, you know, giving hope to the listeners. That's all that we could hope and pray for, is that somebody on the other end of the microphones is listening to this, and maybe if they're having a bad day, we can shed a little bit of light and give them some love and some positivity and some faith, something, you know, for them to focus on, that to let them know that they are worth it. You know, they are worthy of living a beautiful life. So thank you, Miss Patricia.
Thanks for coming on today.
Yes, thank you so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, give a warm round of applause one more time to our new friend, our homegirl, Miss Patricia. Yeah, it's a packed audience in here today. You didn't know it was a packed house, huh? For everyone out there, man, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and I hope you guys have a beautiful rest of your week. Much love. God bless you guys, and we will see you on the next one. Peace. What's going on, everybody? This is Buddha from the ARCast, and I just wanted to thank you for checking out this week's episode. It means a lot, and if you could share it with a friend or a loved one, somebody in need in recovery, or maybe somebody who just needs that little bit of extra positivity in their life, we'd greatly appreciate it. If you would like to join us here on the ARCast, either in the studio live or online, hit us up. The links are down in the show notes of this episode, and on there, you can find direct links to our main website here at America's Rehab Campus and all of our social media platforms. Follow us. We keep the posts positive and motivational, focused on recovery, health, and wellness. As you know, in this modern day and age, we need as much love as possible, y'all. And as always, if you or somebody you know is in need of substance abuse treatment, please don't hesitate to give us a call. We're open 24 hours a day, and our direct phone number is 1-833-272-7342. Once again, that phone number is 1-833-272-7342. I hope you all have a beautiful rest of your day. Much love, and God bless. Peace.